This is CKCU Literary News, bringing you the latest on literatures in Europe today. Here's your host, Hans-Georg Ruprecht.
With Friederike Knabe, our senior literary correspondent.
Good morning, Friederike. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Hans. And how are you?
Well, you know, I'm excited because we will have something very special today for our listeners.
Oh, really?
Yes, we do. It is, well, I don't know how to say it. Maybe we should start with a remark about cats.
Cats?
Well, some people like cats. And
some people like big cats.
Precisely. And apparently, according to Sibylle Levitscharov, philosophers like lions.
Oh.
Yes. Well, I want you to read the opening of her novel, Blumenberg.
Blumenberg. Okay, we're going to talk about him afterwards.
Oh, definitely. We need to introduce Hans Blumenberg, distinguished, highly regarded German philosopher.
Yes, okay, let's look at what he has to say. Blumenberg had just picked up a new cassette to put into the recorder when he looked up from his desk and saw it. Big, yellow, breathing, indubitably a lion. The lion was looking over at him. It was looking at him from the reclining position, because the lion was lying on a Bukhara carpet, a small distance from the wall. It must have been an elderly lion, perhaps no longer in full possession of all its powers, but gifted with the remarkable power of existence. Blumenberg recognized that at least at second glance, while still fighting to keep his self-control. "Just don't lose your composure in this case of all cases," Blumenberg said to himself. Perhaps the sentence was less correct than that, even though Blumenberg made sure to maintain an iron discipline when finding sentences in his head, because he had accustomed himself to assembling sentences in an orderly rather than, for example, a hasty fashion, almost in as orderly a fashion as normal speech, whether he happened to have a primed recording device in front of him, or the ears of a child. Blumenberg knew straight away that there were many wrong things to be done here, and only one right one, to wait and maintain his composure. He also knew that he was being granted an extraordinary honor in the form of the lion, that an honor of the higher kind had been communicated to him, prepared well in advance, and granted to him after extensive examination. It was plainly assumed Blumenberg, at his already quite advanced age, would easily be able to deal with it. The only curious thing was that the lion emanated nothing indistinct, blurred, mixed lying an air atom commingled. Its outlines did not quiver in the back and forth of Blumenberg's wave-crossed thoughts. No lion-headed mirror neurons flashed and seized around the crystalline flicker of hallucination. The lion was there, tangible, furry, yellow. Even though he exhorted himself to present an unshakable model of calm, his heart was racing. A lion! A lion! A lion! Of course he wasn't afraid of it. It didn't look like an escaped lion. On the other hand, Blumenberg, protected by the big, heavy writing desk that he sat behind, on the other, this lion lay there completely calmly, by no means behaving like an unsettled runaway beast, or even like a nervous Christian eater.
Thank you, Friederike.
Isn't that amazing?
It is absolutely amazing. This is a sample from Sibylle Levitscharov's award-winning novel.
Well, Friederike, obviously not this lion's roaring, but maybe it's fitting with today's show, isn't it?
Now, let me repeat. This is a sample from Sibylle Levicharov's award-winning novel, Blumenberg, translated by Sean Whiteside. And this translation is a courtesy of Suhrkamp Insel Verlag. Who is this philosopher whose name is well known among academic circles? Hans Blumenberg. Hans Blumenberg, born in 1920 in Lübeck. Where else? Well, who was born there?
Thomas Mann.
45 years earlier, Thomas Mann. And who had a very distinguished academic career, who is known for a number of important books, including one which I read with fascination. I'll give you first the German title, Die Lesbarkeit der Welt, The Readability of the World, okay, 1979. And then he is known for a book entitled Work on Myth. Then a well-translated book on metaphorology. Funny word, no? In any case, the title is Paradigms for a Metaphorology, published by Cornell University, 2010. Now, that's the background, right?
Yeah. Why does Sibylle Levicharov picked him? That is a good question.
Yes.
Now, we do know that as soon as she left high school, when she was 18, she already was reading Blumenberg without understanding really what he was trying to tell her. And so she was reading his work ever since. Mm-hmm. So now she's in her late 50s. And so she has been reading him most of his life. And she felt it would be something that she would like to find a way to describe him and to bring him to life in a different way than, because he died in 1996, I believe. And so she came up with the idea of the lion. Now, that's an interesting idea.
Isn't it?
You know, and they obviously talk to each other, the lion and the philosopher.
Yeah, but this is authentic, right? This is not her imagination. The lion is a emblematic figure in the entire intellectual life of Hans Blumenberg. He has even written a little essay entitled Löwen, Lions, right?
About
published after his...
Yeah, it was something in his own life, but also apparently, you know, if you think about what the lion symbolizes,
yes,
it's the king, the king of the jungle. It's
a symbol of power. Authority. Yeah.
Authority. So, and kings have been surrounding themselves with lions. So it is also has a symbolic value in that sense as well.
What does the book suggest in terms of this relationship between philosophical groundbreaking work, because this is his, in any case, in many ways, original, innovative, and academic authority? Moreover, what does this tell us about the relationship between master and disciple, or teacher and
student,
disciple? This is part of her novel, right?
Yes, it is, because it is not. There is the reality of the professor. And he has students, as many professors have, and the story of some of the students are also very much featured in the novel. But then there is the night time when he sits at home and he philosophizes and he writes and he thinks, and he is in dialogue with the lion. And of course, we learn through that dialogue a lot about his philosophy and a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Now, having a nightlife as a thinker, is this a common practice, and what does it mean in terms of the relationship between the philosopher and the world? Is it a withdrawal from the world, or is it a different perspective upon the world?
Well, I mean, Levicharov herself seems to have the same ideas about withdrawing, that you, in order to reflect on the bigger issues of society and life, you need to withdraw up to a point. Like many authors say, they have to leave the country before they can write about their country.
Right.
So there can be an inner withdrawal as well as an external withdrawal to really reflect on the context and the intricacies of the society that you live in. So I can imagine that is part of her own thinking, but because she's so familiar with his work, she brings it out in a dialogue almost between herself and her character.
Would you say that it is also, this is my understanding, having read passages and heard about her work from other sources, that she is heavily criticizing academic life of, let's say, the 80s or 70s, 80s. What do you see there as her main take at this problem?
Yeah, this is very interesting. In an interview that she gave recently, you know, I'm 10 years older than she is. So I went to university, same university. I was in Berlin. She's in Berlin. She studied in Berlin, a different subject. But she also reflects about the student days when she started in the 70s and late 60s when... And there was an intellectual searching. There was a freedom. You didn't study for to finish as fast as possible. You had this range of influences, and you had professors you admired, and she had professors she admired. I had professors I admired, and I was in awe, and I was trying to learn as much as possible. But it was this freedom of expression, a freedom of research. And she feels that later on or nowadays, there is a limitation of what can be done at university research.
And if thinking. I may add my own little piece of the collection, we had no pressure at all as far as the completion of a program, taking exams or doing work for a degree. We were absolutely free. We could spend 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. Nobody cared about this. And a good father state, you know, paid for this. This was absolutely magnificent. Huh?
Academic, was...
In Germany.
In Germany was free. Education was free. I did have limitations because I had to have money to live on.
Yes, of course. Yeah, but we were jobbing.
And my grant required me to submit papers on a regular basis. Right, but the average, you're absolutely right. Most students had a lot of time and could explore subjects in very great detail. And when it didn't quite work out, they switched to another topic and researched that. And there was a freedom and innocence in a way of exploring the worlds of philosophy and science and thinking that nowadays is very difficult to maintain.
Now, let us emphasize, Sibylle Levachárov won the most prestigious literary award this year, the Georg Büchner Prize, after having received as a young author in 1998 one of the extremely important literary awards from Austria, the Ingeborg Bachmann Prize, and was shortlisted with this book precisely for the Deutsche Book Prize at the Frankfurter Book Fair in 2011. She received the prize of the Leipzig Book Fair.
For another novel she wrote, Apostolov.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that novel, because this is another masterpiece
that
of
is
contemporary fiction. How do you see it? What is your response to this?
I mean, the Pong, this very first book that she wrote, it was
for which she got the
Ingeborg Bachmann Prize. It was a very small work, and I think she was quite surprised that she was even considered for the prize. And but it encouraged her to keep working, and so her first big novel was Apostolov.
Yes.
Which, in a way, is an auto-fiction type novel.
In what way?
Because her father was Bulgarian and her mother was German. So she was born and brought up in Germany. But clearly the father was a very difficult person, and he committed suicide at some point in her young years. And the novel really takes two sisters to take the ashes of their father, back to Bulgaria, and it becomes a dialogue between the sisters, between a local driver and tour guide, so to say, Bulgarian, with the name of Pap Apostolov. And it's also a reflection on the reality of Bulgaria. It's a harsh criticism of the situation in Bulgaria of the time, and not surprising, I would think, but also reflecting what had happened to the country and how it had developed. So it is a very, very important novel, and I think at the time unusual, because he did not have that much knowledge about Bulgaria coming in a fictional way in the German language context.
I can't help but think of other writers of Central European background who made it big in German, in a German language, and became international stars insofar as they brought to the German literary scene their life experiences and their literary skills from other countries than Germany. Think of Hertha Müller.
Yes.
Think of now the winner of the
Theresa Moira,
winner of the German Book Prize.
Yes.
You see,
yes.
Let's not forget
Svetlana Alexeyevich,
this year's winner of the German Peace Prize, of the Friedenspreis des Deutschen Buchhandels, German Book Fair, one of the most prestigious awards as well.
That is given to a Belarus author, Svetlana Alexeyevich.
Yes.
And that is also bringing in the Eastern European influence into the German language context.
As if the literary scene in Germany were to become a meeting place for authors from the surrounding countries, and particularly from the Eastern European
it does seem
country.
That way. We could do, actually, Hans, we might want,
yes, we would want
do
to
a
do
program.
This.
We might want to do a separate program about those authors, because it is fascinating.
Yes.
Because some of them, I remember, I don't recall her name right now, but she is Russian-born, and she only learned German at a younger person, but not as a child. And she writes in German, you know, and the German is extraordinary. So there's a lot of interesting topics that we might want to explore at another time.
Well, I should like to draw the attention of our listeners to a now regular series of broadcasts with a fascinating new editorial development in Poland under the title New Europe Writers. They are online. We aired already one show with books published by this company, and we will do more. And I can only recommend to go back to playlist, where precisely a recent show on new Europe writers in English translation. See, it's still available. They are doing thematically tailored and conceived kind of series on Eastern European cities, imagine.
Oh, wow.
Yes. With short stories, interviews, poems, to give us the feeling for all that what's happening now after the fall of the so-called Iron Curtain.
Yes, yes.
So this is the new reality in Europe, you see?
Yes, there's a lot of exciting things happening.
Really, really.
Absolutely, see? Yeah.
So let's then complete our broadcast today with a heartfelt congratulation to Sybille Levitscharov, the award-winning author and now laureate of the prestigious Georg Büchner Prize 2013.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful, right?
Yes.
No? And thank you very much, Frederike, for being
pleasure.
With us
it's fun
today.
To take a different approach and learn about the lion.
Yeah, not about the lion. We should recommend this amazing novel, Sybille Levitscharov.
Blumenberg.
It is
Not yet translated.
Yeah,
into.
But as far as we know, the rights have been bought by
Siegel Press. and Seeger Press has just published the English version of Palustovov, the other book we just talked about. And it is translated by Katie Derbyshire, who also has a blog going on new books in German, which is a very good blog. And so that has become available. And I'm sure that now Seeger Press is working on the new one, Blumenberg.
Yes. Okay. Goodbye for now.
Wonderful.
See you
soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
That was CKCU Literary News, a regular program about literatures in Europe today, brought to you by CKCU FM 93.1, the community-based campus radio of Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. We can be heard worldwide. Simply go to http://carleton.ca/litnews/ for streaming and podcast. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter under CKCU Lit News in one word. Thanks for listening.